Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear reports from Dorothy Gundy and Brian Lynn. John Russell explains how hip-hop music can teach you about grammar. We close with the next part of The Making of a Nation. But first, Australia's government has invited backpackers and students to seek work in the country. Backpackers are mostly younger people who travel in a simple way and do not spend very much money. The move is an effort to fill critical workforce shortages as Australia faces an outbreak of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. Prime Minister Scott Morrison on Wednesday said his government would not require backpackers or students arriving in the next several weeks to pay the usual $453 visa cost. He also urged such visitors to seek work as they travel around the country. "Come on down now because you wanted to come to Australia," Morrison said during a televised press conference. He added that the backpackers and students could seek work in agriculture, hospitality, and so many other parts of the economy that lack enough workers. The announcement comes as Morrison faces criticism at the beginning of an election year. Critics say he has not done well in dealing with the Omicron outbreak. Australia is experiencing record numbers of new infections and deaths. Officials in Australia reported 67 new deaths and nearly 80,000 new cases on Wednesday. Chief Health Officer Paul Kelly said Australians should expect the pandemic's total death numbers to rise. Australian businesses are struggling with the growing number of workers who are sick or ordered to isolate.
"19-year-old Zara Rutherford set the world record Thursday as the youngest woman to fly alone around the world. Rutherford took the Guinness World Record that had been held by 30-year-old American flyer Shasta Ways since 2017. The youngest male to fly alone is Britain's Travis Ludlow. He set that record on July 12, 2021, when he was 18 years and 150 days old. The British-Belgian pilot started her trip around the world on August 18th. It covered 51,000 kilometers over 52 countries and 5 continents. On Thursday, Rutherford landed her small airplane back in Western Belgium. "It's just really crazy. I haven't quite processed it," she said. The flight was supposed to take 3 months, but bad weather and visa delays kept her grounded and extended the trip by about 2 months. Rutherford started in Belgium and headed west over Britain, Iceland, and Greenland. The path took her over Canada, the United States, and Latin America. Rutherford could not leave Alaska for a month because of weather and visa delays. A winter storm forced another long stop in the Russian Far East before she traveled to Korea, Indonesia, India, the Middle East, and back to Europe. To meet the requirement for a round-the-world flight, Rutherford had to land on two points opposite each other on Earth, Jambi in Indonesia and Tumaco in Colombia. The teenager said the last part of her trip from Germany had been difficult. She had to deal with rain and snow coming out of Frankfurt. But she was happy to be accompanied by the Belgian Air Force's Red Devils team before landing. "The people were incredible everywhere," she said. Rutherford said she has been traveling in small planes with her pilot parents since she was six. She gained her pilot's license in 2020 and started flying herself at 14. Rutherford dreams of being an astronaut. She hopes her trip will get more women interested in science, technology, and aviation. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Wildlife workers in Sri Lanka say two elephants were recently found dead after eating plastic waste in an open landfill. The problem is not new in the country. Conservationists and those who treat wildlife said about 20 elephants have died in the last 8 years after eating plastic waste. The incidents happened at a landfill near a village in the Ampara district, about 210 kilometers east of the capital, Colombo. Nihal Pushpakumara is a veterinarian, a doctor for animals. He told the Associated Press that examinations of the dead animals showed they had swallowed large amounts of plastic that is not biodegradable. Biodegradable means a material can break down naturally in the environment. Different kinds of plastics were discovered inside the elephants, along with other substances the animals could not digest, Pushpakumara said. Elephants are deeply respected in Sri Lanka. They are also endangered. Their numbers have dropped from about 14,000 in the 19th century to 6,000 in 2011, the latest government data shows. Pushpakumara said hungry elephants can end up eating plastics or sharp objects that can damage their digestive systems. The elephants then stop eating and become too weak to keep their heavy frames upright, he added. Unable to eat or drink, the animals can quickly die. In 2017, the government announced a plan to recycle waste in dumps near wildlife areas or zones to prevent elephants from eating dangerous materials. Officials also promised to build electric fences around the areas to keep the animals away. But so far, neither plan has been fully carried out. The government estimates there are 54 waste dumps in wildlife zones around the country. About 300 elephants move around these areas. The landfill in Ampara was set up in 2008 with aid from the European Union. Waste collected from 9 nearby villages is being dumped there but is not being recycled. In 2014, an electric fence that protected the area was struck by lightning and was never repaired. Villagers said they fear the elephants, which moved closer and settled near the waste area. Many people use fireworks to chase the animals away when they come into the village. Others have built electric fences around their homes. But some of the local people do not know how to safely complete the fences. A village councillor in the area told the AP that people setting up electric barriers could endanger their own lives as well as those of the elephants. The official added, "Even though we call them a menace, wild elephants are also a resource." He called on local officials to find ways to protect both humans and the elephants and to permit agriculture to continue. I'm Brian Lynn.
Imagine you enjoy hip-hop music or want to learn about the history of hip-hop. You might listen to Run-DMC, one of the most famous groups of the 1980s. Let's listen to a few words from the group's famous song, How'd You Do It, D?
The answers for questions I'm telling to thee, that they always ask me, DMC. How'd you do it, D?
In today's Everyday Grammar, we will show you how hip-hop can teach you about English grammar. You will learn about pronouns and contractions with question words. Let's listen to the first line again.
The answers for questions I'm telling to thee.
This line sets up the idea about questions and answers. But we will have to set that aside for later in the report. The word of interest in this line is a pronoun, the word the. This is a very old second-person pronoun that is no longer used in everyday speaking. Its modern equivalent would be the pronoun you. Google Ngrams has data from books dating back many hundreds of years. A recent Ngrams search suggested that the was more commonly used in the 1500s and 1600s. You will probably never hear an American use the pronoun the in everyday speaking, although its meaning is commonly understood. You might be asking yourself, why would a modern singer use an ancient pronoun? While only the artist truly knows the reason, one possibility is that the rhymes with the final word, the name D, in the next line. This line now leads us to contractions with question words. Question words are words such as what, where, who, when, why, or how. These words, along with changes in the speaker's voice, show that a person is asking a question, at least in everyday speech. In writing, the question word and a question mark show a question. English speakers often use question words with certain verbs or helping verbs: be, do, has, would, and so on. Sometimes English speakers combine the question word and a short form of the verb or helping verb. This is known as a contraction. Let's think back to our example from Run-DMC.
But they always ask me, DMC, how'd you do it, D?
In this line, the question word is how. The helping verb is did. However, did appears in its shortened form, d. How did becomes howd. This is a contraction. To be clear, this is not slang or impolite language. This is normal, everyday speech. You might be wondering how different verbs and helping verbs contract. The answer is that there are regular, repeated ways in which English speakers make contractions. Consider these three helping verbs that often appear after question words: had, did, and would. All of these reduce to apostrophe D, as in d. Run DMC was using the contraction for did, as in how did you do it? A person might also ask, who'd called you before that? This is a shorter way of saying, who had called you before that? Or a person might ask, where'd you like to go? This is short for, where would you like to go? Other common verbs, is and has, for example, both contract in the same way with apostrophe S. This sounds like z or s, depending on the situation. So a question like, where is New York City? Becomes, where's New York City? A question like, what has been going on? Becomes, what's been going on? In today's report, we explored what a few lines from a song can teach you about English grammar. You learned about a pronoun that has been out of use for a long time, and you learned about the idea behind contractions with question words. The next time you listen to music, pay careful attention to contractions with question words. Make note of how speakers form the contractions and try to understand the verb that is being reduced. With time, you will make great progress in your ability to understand and form your own contracted speech. And perhaps your English teacher will one day ask you, how'd you learn about contractions with question words? I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In 1914, Europe exploded into the First World War. It was a war no nation really wanted, but no nation seemed able to stop it. The assassination of Austria's Archduke Franz Ferdinand in the city of Sarajevo was the spark that set off the explosion. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell about the war and how it affected the United States under President Woodrow Wilson.
The Austrian Archduke was murdered by Serbian nationalists. They opposed Austrian control of their homeland. After the assassination, Austria declared war on Serbia. One of Serbia's allies was Russia. Russia agreed to help Serbia in any war against Austria. Austria had allies, too. The most important was Germany. Germany wanted Russia to stay out of the war. When Russia refused, Germany declared war on Russia. Then Germany declared war on Russia's close ally, France. Britain entered the war a few days later, when Germany violated the neutrality of Belgium.
One nation after another entered the conflict to protect its friends or to honor its treaties. Within a week, most of Europe was at war. On one side were the Central Powers, Germany and Austria-Hungary. On the other side were the Triple Entente allies, France, Britain, and Russia. Many other nations took sides. Bulgaria and Turkey joined the Central Powers. Italy, Romania, Portugal, and Greece joined the Allies.
The United States hoped to stay out of the war. President Wilson immediately declared American neutrality. He said, "It is a war with which we have nothing to do, whose causes cannot touch us." Most Americans agreed with President Wilson. They did not want to get involved in the fighting. However, many found it difficult to remain neutral in their hearts. Some Americans had family roots in Germany. They supported the Central Powers. A greater number of Americans had family roots in Britain or France. They supported the Allies. Yet the official American policy was neutrality. The United States planned to continue to trade with both sides.
Germany and Austria expected a quick victory in the war. They were caught between two powerful enemies, Russia and France. But German military leaders were not worried. They had a battle plan they were sure would succeed. The German generals planned to strike quickly at France with most of the German army. They expected to defeat France in a short time and then turn to fight Russia. In this way, the German army would not have to fight both enemies at the same time.
At first, the plan worked. 2 million German soldiers swept across Belgium and into France. They rushed forward toward Paris, hoping for a fast victory. But the German commanders made a mistake. They pushed their men too fast. When British and French forces struck back outside Paris, the tired and worn German soldiers could not hold their positions. The battle was fierce and unbelievably bloody. In the end, the Germans were forced to withdraw. The German withdrawal gave the Allies time to prepare strong defenses. There was no chance now for a quick German victory. Instead, it would be a long war, with Germany and Austria facing enemies on two sides. Britain and France were on the west, Russia was on the east.
The Allies took immediate steps to reduce Germany's trade with the rest of the world. The British Navy began seizing war supplies found on neutral ships sailing toward German ports. It then expanded its efforts to block food exports to Germany. The blockade by Britain and the other Allies was very successful. Germany faced possible starvation. Its navy was not strong enough to break the blockade with surface ships. Its only hope was to break the blockade with another naval weapon, submarines. Germany announced that it would use its submarines to sink any ship that came near the coast of Britain. The threat included ships from neutral nations that tried to continue trading with the Allies.
The United States and other neutral nations immediately protested the German announcement. They said it was a clear violation of international law. When a German submarine sank a British ship in the Irish Sea, one of the victims was an American citizen. A few weeks later, an American oil ship was damaged during a sea battle between British Navy ships and a German submarine. Then came the most serious incident of all. It involved a British passenger ship called the Lusitania. The Lusitania was sailing from New York City to Britain when it was attacked by a German submarine. The Lusitania sank in 18 minutes. 1,200 persons were killed. 129 were Americans.
The sinking of the Lusitania shocked and horrified the American people. They called it mass murder. They turned against Germany. President Wilson warned that he might declare war on Germany if Germany continued to sink civilian ships. Germany did not want war with the United States. It already faced a strong fight against the European allies. It promised not to sink any more civilian ships without warning, and it offered regrets for the Lusitania incident.
President Wilson accepted Germany's apology. Like most Americans, he hoped to stay out of the bloody European struggle. And he also knew that the record of the Allies was not completely clean. For example, he was troubled by reports of mass hunger in Germany. He and other Americans felt the British food blockade was cruel. They also were shocked by the way British forces brutally crushed a rebellion in Ireland at the time. Most of all, the American people were sickened by reports of what was happening on the battlefields of Europe. The armies were using poison gas and other terrible weapons. Soldiers on both sides were dying by the millions. The war had become a bloodbath.
The United States had a presidential election in 1916. President Wilson won the nomination of the Democratic Party to seek re-election. Democrats around the country shouted their support with these words, "He kept us out of war." Wilson himself did not like the words. He felt it raised false hopes. But people continued to say it because they did not want war.
The Republican Party nominated Supreme Court Justice Charles Evans Hughes as its candidate for president. Hughes was a moderate Republican. He supported a number of social reforms. Like Wilson, Hughes promised to keep the United States neutral. However, one of his supporters was former President Theodore Roosevelt. And Roosevelt called for strong American policies that could lead to war. Roosevelt's words led many Americans to see Wilson as the candidate of peace and Hughes as the candidate of war.
Voting in the presidential election was very close. At first, it seemed Hughes had won. He went to bed on election night, believing he would be America's next president. But voting results later that night confirmed Wilson as the winner. The election was so close, the Republicans did not accept defeat for 2 weeks. Woodrow Wilson had won another term. During that term, he would find it increasingly difficult to honor the words of the campaign, "He kept us out of war." Finally, he would find it impossible. The United States entered World War I while Woodrow Wilson was president.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.